Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, yesterday's news that Carson Wentz was going to Washington was not as obviously as big as Russell Wilson going to the Denver Broncos. And while the two circumstances aren't actually equal, there's a reason why Seattle parted ways with Russell Wilson, and there's a reason why Indianapolis parted ways with Carson Wentz, and they're not the same, even though you think the circumstances are kind of similar. Seattle doesn't really know where it's going with its quarterback, but they know they're rebuilding, and Indianapolis doesn't really know who they're going with their quarterback, and they want desperately to make the playoffs, something they came short of last year, losing to Jacksonville in a game that would have put them into the postseason. But it also take the two teams that were on the receiving ends of those quarterbacks. Denver may have given up a lot to get Russell Wilson, but he's a Pro Bowl level player that does put the Broncos in a conversation in a very loaded AFC. If Indianapolis wants to stay in the conversation of a loaded AFC, and remember, they just needed one of their win in the final two games to be in the playoffs last year, they're going to need to find their quarterback. They know it is not going to be Carson Wentz. They did not want to bring him back. And it's interesting because they keep saying it wasn't about the final game. And I guess that may be true because they appear to have had some problems with Carson Wentz off the field in terms of his, you know, the ability to coach him, the ability of him to change his game, all of those things that they talk about, lack of leadership. But in reality, if he had gotten them into the playoffs, he'd be their quarterback to this day. Washington, on the other hand, has been toying around with different QBs for a number of years, while Ron Rivera has been there, certainly. But now they've got a quarterback that has had good moments in this league. He can play in this league. He just hasn't played well enough in this league. And that's the big question. When is enough enough in terms of a quarterback? How much do you need? What's the availability? Who is out there that can help change your franchise? And when you look at the landscape, and maybe, just maybe, the only one is that's available is a Carson Wentz, do you agree to pay the $23 million and give up the draft picks to acquire said quarterback? We'll evaluate this some more. Also get into the Lakers last night, a tough loss against Houston. But could LeBron have just won the game outright? We'll talk about that coming up. And then Dave Preston, WTOP, will join us from Washington. We'll get the Commanders' version of this trade and what it means for them going into 2022.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It's Throwback Thursday. On this date, 1978, the Incredible Hulk made its television debut. We're doing 70s TV themes, just kind of having a fun time with that this morning. When I was young, there was nothing more cooler than being in Los Angeles Highway Patrol motorcycle cop. That was just the coolest job. Did they solve crimes on this show? I can't remember.
I really don't remember.
Aren't those guys usually traffic cops?
I always thought it was cool them to just, you know, be riding side by side in the same lane. Seemed dangerous.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
They're like fighter pilots.
I know Eric Estrada was one of the actors. I can't remember the other actor's
name. One ever does. Just the blonde guy.
Okay. I saw something on, I don't know if it's true or not, I saw one of those internet things, which could be a hoax, but They say the sergeant on that show is Chris Pine's father.
Oh, I'm going to have to look that up.
I'm going to have to look that up, too. So, Chips. Yeah, I mean.
Wilcox was the
other guy? Okay.
Robert Pine is the sergeant.
They say it's Chris Pine's dad.
Look at
played the sergeant. Look at that. It's all connected, isn't it? Whole Hollywood. But yeah, man, that looked like the coolest job to me, being a L.A. motorcycle cop. That looked awesome.
Yeah, right here, father of Catherine Pine and Chris Pine.
Wonderful.
Who knew?
Of Star Trek and Wonder Woman fame.
Oh, come on, he's been a lot of things.
Like what else?
I'll come back to you.
Exactly.
He was in Horrible
Tony
Bosses 2.
Bing! He was in Horrible Bosses 2 is right. That is true. Good one. Excellent.
Yeah, but Star Trek,
Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman.
Played the boyfriend. Steve Taylor. Is that who it was? I don't know my Wonder Woman comic. So, nevertheless.
A Wrinkle in Time.
Oh, stop.
No, I'm looking at his IMDb.
Yeah,
but it's funny that, as I, you know, looking at his IMDb, the first four that they show, because they always show that in the app, like, you know, the most popular ones, there's three Star Treks and one Wonder Woman.
Yeah, okay. There you go.
So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, exactly. All right, but I do know Carson Wentz, and he's going to Washington to play for the Commanders, something I haven't quite not gotten comfortable with, the Commanders. But nevertheless, let's look at it from Washington's perspective. Is this a deal I would have made? Well, I guess I would have if I looked around the league and went, doesn't look like anybody wants to come here. We can't get Russell Wilson. We can't get Aaron Rodgers. We need a quarterback. And I'm looking around. I can't find one. And I don't want to do this game again where it's just somebody under center until we get shown that they can't play the play at a level that is consistent. Maybe I would have pulled the trigger on this trade. But if I'm a Washington fan, I'm not exactly super thrilled on this. I don't think look what Denver fans are doing right now. And obviously, they're two totally different quarterbacks. I get it. One is getting a 9-time Pro Bowler who can, you know, can still play at a Pro Bowl level. And the other one's getting a quarterback who you just really don't know, right? I mean, he was once an MVP candidate. He had the Colts heading to the postseason with ease. I mean, the Colts were on cruise control, man, to get to the postseason. And they couldn't get it done. Win at home against Vegas or on the road against a team led by an interim head coach on the final game of the season where the other team could see the beach and golf courses in their future the second that game was over. And there was so much pride on Jacksonville's side of the ball. They're like, nah, we'll play hard and win this game. And Wentz folded. And look, as I said earlier, there's a lot of reasons why the Colts lost those two games during the season. There were a couple of things that occurred that cost them their chance of going to the playoffs. But quarterback play is one of them. And sometimes a quarterback has to deliver when things aren't going their way. When the team isn't on all cylinders all over the place. Every good quarterback in this league has done that. Tom Brady has done it multiple times in his career where the Patriots didn't exactly play great defense or things were going wrong with a certain aspect of the game. And yet Brady found a way to win it and went, all right, we got some things to fix, but we got away with a win and that's all that matters. That's what you need from your quarterback. Going to Jacksonville and realizing, okay, maybe the defense isn't really slowing this team down. That's on the quarterback to go, fine, all right, you know what? If we got to win this one 35-31, we'll win it 35-31, but I'll get you the 35. And Wentz didn't do that. Part of the reason they lost to Jacksonville was his play. But there were a lot of things that didn't work either. I think the play calling over the last two games for the Colts was terrible. Jonathan Taylor, he's an MVP candidate. And you're relying more on Wentz in those final games than you were Jonathan Taylor. Stupid. And now, okay, so now he's going to Washington. There's Antonio Gibson, there's Terry McLaurin. Like there's some playmakers on Ron Rivera's team. But will it be the same old Carson Wentz? Now, one of the things about a quarterback, look, there's a lot more quarterbacks in the history of the league on Wentz's level than there have been on the Aaron Rodgers level, right? Tom Brady level, right? There are plenty of quarterbacks who have gone through this NFL where you're right in the middle of your thought on how they play, right? Wentz isn't quite a bust. Right. When I think of bust, I don't think about a guy who was once considered an MVP, who, had a winning record last season, even though they lost their final two games and didn't make the playoffs. Like, I don't think that's necessarily a bust. I think there's more quarterbacks in the league like that. Some of them have been, some of them weren't picked, number two overall. But I don't think Wentz is quite the bust yet, but he's certainly not on that 1A level of quarterback. But he's the best I think Washington is going to do if they were really actively seeking somebody to replace Taylor Heinicke. Like, if they knew Henneke was done, like, all right, well, we're not going far with this kid. All right, he's fine, but he's not a starter. And then look around and where are you going to get it? If you can't land Jimmy Garoppolo, you're not going to land Aaron Rodgers, you're not going to land Russell Wilson, who? Who? And if the Colts, who never, ever, ever showed their support for Wentz this entire offseason. In fact, it was the opposite. Chris Ballard was asked a number of times about the commitment the organization had to Carson Wentz, and he said, nah, we don't have that. Okay. So now he's on the trade block. Who are the players? What can we get for him? Because it's not like Russell Wilson, where we can go, oh, you want our quarterback? Yeah, we may be going in a different direction, but we want, let me see how many picks and how many players you're going to give us in this deal. The Colts were like, okay, a couple of thirds, it could be seconds. All right, that sounds about right. We'll take it. Because we don't want him anymore. And I think that is the difference in terms of how Washington is receiving their quarterback and Denver is receiving their quarterback. Because Seattle would have liked to have kept Russell Wilson. It's just circumstances got away from the team. He was disgruntled. The team was kind of looking at its situation going, yeah, it's quite, we probably have to cut ties with him and a couple of other players to just sort of get this thing wrapped together in a more financially structured team that may take a couple of years to rebuild, but that's the direction we feel like we should go. It almost feels to me that the Colts were angry at Carson Wentz. That Chris Ballard, Frank Reich, Jim Irsay, the owner, they were upset that this didn't work out. And I don't want to use the word punished. I think that's too strong here. But that's the way they looked at the way that team finished its season. You know, we should have been in the playoffs, but it's your fault. It's so much your fault. You're not going to be playing here next year. And we thought all the tools that we had, you would be a better player. You would be a better quarterback. That we could go from Andrew Luck to Phillip Rivers to you with a few Jacoby Brissetts in there. But we couldn't. We gave you 1 year with an MVP-level running back, a better offensive line than you had in Philadelphia, a coach that you were familiar with, a defense that was going to keep games in check most of the way, and you still couldn't get into an expanded postseason in a division that had two of the worst teams in the NFL in it. And then we asked you to win one of those games with the worst team in it. Now, you see how I'm getting angry just saying this?
Yeah, calm down.
Imagine if you're Jim Irsay saying this, and it's like your passion. Right? Like, I'm just getting frustrated with him, and I'm not even a fan of the Colts. I can only imagine if I was the owner of the team how I would feel.
I'm wondering, do you think Frank Reich stuck up for him at all?
I think he did.
During that final meeting?
I think he did. There was a report that he apologized to Jim Irsay about the whole thing after that game against Jacksonville. And I think part of the apology was Carson Wentz. Because, like, again, my memory is short, but I also remember a lot in sports. Like I can't remember that my daughter had a doctor's appointment today. I just texted my wife during the break and went, "Are you guys at a thing?" And she goes, "Doctor." And I went, "Oh yeah, what father of the year am I?" I didn't even know my daughter had a doctor's appointment today. But I remember a lot about sports, and I have a hard time remembering a game that was more embarrassing to an organization than what the Colts did against Jacksonville in that final game of the season. I've seen good teams lose to bad, bad football teams before. I can't remember a really good team that was once the hottest team in the league losing to the worst team when they absolutely needed to win against a division rival they owned. That team couldn't win in Jacksonville. That was the one thing we said going into. Remember when I was telling you, hey, I got no chance of going to the playoffs with the Steelers, but there's one little hope.
Yep.
The Colts can't win in Jacksonville. For whatever reason, they can't win in Jacksonville, right? They lost to Jacksonville to open up the season a year ago, and Jacksonville never won a game after that, right? I said that was the only hope. But even with that, I said, but this team has to win that game, and they're going to win that game. Last year, on any other year, was probably, whatever. But if you went to Jacksonville knowing you absolutely had to win that game and you still didn't,
then, I mean, you're going up against a...
It's humiliating.
And you're going up against a team that had turmoil upon turmoil.
A mess. I mean, a disaster of a team.
I mean, just a disaster season.
A rookie quarterback. They weren't even going up against, like, a grizzled veteran that's like, I've been in this league forever. I'll get us through this. They were going through a quarterback that never had a fantastic game in his first year.
His entire NFL career so far.
His NFL career. He never had that stellar game where you went, That's the number one overall pick.
That's why he's number one.
Interim head coach who knew he was getting fired and wasn't going to be retained on any new staff that was coming on board. I don't even remember who the interim coach was.
No, I don't either.
But I'm sure it's not going to be here much longer. Right?
I was just thinking the same thing.
Right? And what? And that? So that team had golf course and beach vacation written all over it.
And the Colts
couldn't win that game?
I guarantee you, trips were already planned before they got. Did you even think they practiced that week?
Get me the hell out of here.
They were just like, they were going through the motions of practice. Like, no one was hitting hard. They're like, guys, let's just not get hurt. You know, I'm heading to Tahiti as soon as the season's over.
And again, imagine the frustration that we're trying to display to you is exponentially larger for Jim Irsay. So when I was saying earlier, I don't think the Seahawks were mad at Russell Wilson for demanding some of the things that he demanded. I don't think this was a trade that went, we're so ticked off at you right now, Russell, you're going to Denver. I think this was, you know what, man, you're probably right. We probably do need to part ways. And you know what, we're going to go in this direction and you probably don't want to be a part of this and we can get a haul for you and we're going to send you off. And he writes this nice, hey, thank you, Seattle, for everything, Super Bowl championship, all that, blah, blah, blah. I think this was, Carson, get out. Just get out of here. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. Enjoy DC or wherever the hell this league takes you after that. You're not playing here anymore. I think there was anger to this. I think they were livid at him. And I think this is why they said, good, I'm glad we got a trading partner, because as soon as we can find one, you're gone. And then that's what happened. All right, again, Dave Preston, WTOP, is going to join us. We'll talk about that. But coming up next, could LeBron have beaten the Rockets without having to go into overtime? Yeah, he could have. We'll tell you next how it could have happened on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
This was probably the quintessential 70s show, right?
Yeah.
Big hair, Charlie's Angels, good-looking women. Charlie just didn't want to be around. Just didn't
Never
want
saw
the intercom.
Him.
Never saw him. Yeah. And there was Bosley. Charlie's Angels. What a great idea. And another great idea.
One thing
for the
I
show.
Noticed when going through this, a lot of crime shows.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're all, yeah, exactly.
They're all crime shows.
It was a weird time because it went into the 80s too, where they would just, it didn't matter. You could be any profession and somehow you could be solving crimes.
Yeah.
Right? You could have a TV show about, you know, police officers like Hill Street Blues, and that sort of made sense. That's what they did. But then you'd have shows like he's a rich guy, but he's a private detective, or he's a tax accountant and he's a private detective, or whatever. And they would solve crimes.
Like two of the shows I was looking at, I mean, they were left on the cutting room floor. I am sorry about that. But Rockford Files.
Just a
detective.
Yeah. Just living on the beach.
Yeah. And then the other one was Columbo, which...
Same thing.
But
Peter Falk.
But I was always fascinated by him. I don't know why. I loved his shows.
Yeah, Columbo.
Because of the way he came to solving the crime.
Right.
Like, it was... I don't know. For me, when I was a kid, I liked reading those Encyclopedia Brown books.
Oh, I did too. I used to love Encyclopedia Prime. Where you got Bugsy Meanie.
Yeah, you try to find out the riddle. Like, you try to find out, then you read the back, and you're like, oh, God. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, his stupid father that couldn't figure out things, so he had to bring it home to the dinner table.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we have a case of a broken candy store. The owner, and then Encyclopedia Brown at dessert would go, Dad, it's the daughter.
Right.
She broke in or the candy store.
And that's how I felt Columbo always was.
Okay, thanks, son.
Yeah. Right. Hey, he just all of a sudden, like, he knew the answer all along, but it was just toying with him.
Yeah. All right, so we got to get to Mr. Laker. I got to get to this LeBron James thing.
Can we talk about Columbo?
Now I want you to talk about LeBron James. Okay, so let me set up this by saying the Lakers have no wiggle room. None. Every game is playoff night.
Yeah.
They have to win more games than they can lose. Every game has got that pressure. They're the ninth seed in the West, and they could lose that if they keep losing these games. So the couple of nights ago, he had 56. And then he took the night off for the knee injury against the Spurs. Going to rest up the knee, and they lost. So LeBron was back last night playing the lowly Houston Rockets, who are the worst team in the league.
By far.
And LeBron got a triple-double. So if I didn't tell you the outcome of the game, and I said LeBron got a triple-double, and they were playing a Rockets team that stinks, you would probably go, well, the Lakers obviously
maybe.
Won if LeBron, you know?
Yeah, maybe even the worst team ever assembled in history.
Right.
I don't know.
Instead, the Rockets won 139-130 in overtime. Now, how in the world did it get to overtime? Because in the final play of regulation, LeBron was driving to the basket in a tie game. And instead of going to the hole, he threw it out to Carmelo Anthony, who missed the shot.
Yeah, Carmelo, who's 50 years old at this point, right?
Right. It's got to be. Maybe pushing, 57.
Pushing 70.
Right. LeBron is driving to the basket. And although he's got a defender coming up, LeBron goes, oh, no. I'll kick it out to Carmelo, and boom, it's 121-120, and we're going to OT against the worst team in the league. And again, games you can't afford to lose.
Yeah.
So this everybody went Ben Simmons crazy on LeBron on social media.
Well, let me tell you about Columbo, Tony. You know, I mean, you watch the video, do a side-by-side, which I'm surprised nobody has put up yet. But it's the exact same play.
I keep watching it, and I keep wondering, okay, what was he thinking? And it's like he's driving in the lane. A defender is coming in, but he doesn't even go to the rim hard. Like, he's not even going like, well, screw it. I'll draw contact. Like, I will get this. But as he's driving to the basket, Carmelo is wide open. He's wide open. But this is what LeBron does. LeBron does that thing in his head, like a beautiful mind, like Russell Crowe, where he's got this like massive algorithm in his brain that says, here's the percentage of me drawing a foul or making this shot, which, by the way, 1 point wins you the basketball game. But he looks and he sees Carmelo Anthony wide open, and his brain goes, no, the best basketball option is to pass it. And so he passes it. Because he doesn't think Carmelo will miss it and will go into overtime rather than go to the basket, maybe make the basket, maybe get fouled, whatever it may be. And that's been his thing. I used to argue with people all the time when people who didn't know basketball would say, LeBron is a selfish player. I'm like, LeBron is the opposite of a selfish. He's almost too unselfish. He does this a lot. He did it in Cleveland. He did it in Miami. He will play into the best basketball option, but maybe, just maybe, the best basketball option is himself.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the stigma that he's stuck with, because we see it, is he doesn't like taking the final shot.
He doesn't like taking the final shot, and sometimes he needs to.
Yeah,
he needs to.
No, he does.
On that particular moment, first of all, he should have been ticked off that he's got the ball in the final seconds against the Rockets in a tie game. He should have said, screw this. I'm the only one that's scoring on this team. I'm going to the basket. And I'm going to make it. or I'm going to the line, some way, somehow, I am going to get a basket or a point on the board. We're going to win this thing.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I told you guys when Dave Preston would come on this show, he is a television savant. And we're doing 70s TV themes on the show today because on a throwback Thursday, 1978, The Incredible Hulk made its television premiere. So we went with the whole 70s library. Dave Preston, WTOP, joins us on a progressive guest line to talk Commanders Carson Wentz in the trade. How are you, my friend?
Tony D, don't make me angry. You won't like me when I'm angry.
Just the sentence I need. What is the feeling of the Carson Wentz trade since it went down?
Well, I think there's it's a question of how good is this guy, but it's also a question of how bad has the quarterback situation been since Kirk Cousins left. It's, as I was telling your producer before I came on, the Washington area, when you haven't been with water for 4 years, you get pretty thirsty,
right?
And you're gonna drink motor oil by mistake, thinking that it's actually water. And that's where I think the fan base is at this time. You look at Carson Wentz. Is he a perfect quarterback? No, he has the feel of an expensive used car that you don't know if it's going to last the entire trip. But it's better than taking the bus. It's better than walking to school. And I think that's where the fan base is at this point, where, well, he's better than Taylor Heinicke. He's better than Alex Smith, who almost lost his leg, and even before he did, was averaging 178 yards passing per game. So I think the area is embracing some change because they knew that the quarterback situation needed to be upgraded, especially in the 21st century, where everything is so skewed towards the offense. I think, Tony, we've both covered the league for 30 years. There was once a time where you didn't necessarily need to have a great quarterback. Now you can't have a quarterback who doesn't put up numbers and be successful in the NFL.
Exactly. And I think in Washington's situation, you're right. There's been so many quarterbacks that have come through and said, I mean, this may be like, okay, I didn't like him, but again, you kind of put it like the way you put it with the motor oil and being thirsty. It's like getting a gift. It may not be the best gift, but at least it's a gift. But in that regard, is there a feeling like Ron Rivera can do something with him that the Colts couldn't do with him?
First, I guess a public service announcement. We do not endorse the drinking of motor oil.
Of course
anytime,
not.
And
by
anywhere,
the way, that's a nice anyhow. Quantum of Solace reference, by the way. And don't think I did not know where you were going with that.
Hey, and by the way, for those kids who follow us on Twitter, DAV Presto, I do a thing called hashtag Bond Birthday. Whenever somebody has a birthday who's involved with the series, whether it's Daniel Craig or the guy who played henchman number 3, we will have it up on Twitter, hashtag Bond Birthday.
I do have a good time with that, by the way.
It's an unhealthy obsession, Tony, at its very best. I think when you look at the quarterbacks they've had 10 different guys have started games for Washington since Kirk Cousins walked out the door. And I'm not saying that Carson Wentz is going to make the Pro Bowl this fall, but he is the first guy they've brought in since Cousins left that you could say, wow, this is a guy who's a starting quarterback, a franchise quarterback. No offense to an older Alex Smith who was on, who was in the sunset of his career to begin with before he got hurt, or any of the other guys that they've brought in for cups of coffee or cups of tea in the last 4 years. But Wentz is the first guy that you look at, and he has the feel of a starting quarterback. Can he be that guy? In many ways, he's still the guy who lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars in Week 18 this past year, threw, I think, for under 200 yards against a Jaguars team that was, hands down, the worst in the league, if not the worst team in the bottom three or four. So you look at what Ron Rivera has done as a head coach with, in the past, he hasn't. You don't think, great offenses with them, but I think he is able to win using the building blocks of defense, special teams, building a strong roster. The question, I think, for Wentz is he going to have more than Terry McLaurin to throw to?
That's what I was going to ask you.
If McLaurin is his only weapon, you're going to see a lot of what we've seen in the past. Taylor Heinicke isn't the next, you know, he isn't a superstar by any stretch of the imagination. But when you have only one proven wide receiver to throw to, your options are somewhat limited. And I think,
yeah, go ahead.
I you know, again, I think, you know, this is not the move that this is not the silver bullet, and they don't have to make any other moves. I think, Tony, they have to draft a quarterback this spring, whether it's Sam Howell from North Carolina in the second or third round, or, you know, take a flyer on somebody in the first. I think they need to bring somebody in just to, because we know that quarterbacks get hurt, and we know that Carson Wentz is a guy who usually doesn't play 16 or now 17 games without getting banged up a little bit. But they also need to go out and get weapons, because there were no weapons this past fall. The team finished 21st, I think, in the league in passing. And no matter how good your defense is, you can't do that and be successful. And, again, Terry McLaurin could have sued the team for lack of support this past fall.
I know numbers and money, it's not a sexy thing with fans. They just want good players, and they want players that they can believe in. But that being said, given all of the struggles that Washington has had at quarterback, was the idea of keeping the $28.5 million $33 million, yeah, and going to get weapons, going with the draft, a Malik Willis, a Kenny Pickett, Sam Howell, you mentioned, going in that direction and saying, look, we'll get our quarterback in the draft. Again, we've teased you with too many quarterbacks that haven't worked, but we're going to use this money. We are one of the tops in the league of having available capital. We'll go get weapons, and this is how we do it. Was that not attractive enough for this organization to go down that road, where now they've had to use $28.3 million against the 33?
Well, and I think, you know, the used car analogy, Tony, there was better value out there for different potential free agents. And you know, at first it was like, ooh, Mitch Trubisky or Mitchell,
right,
Trubisky,
right,
or Mitchie or whatever he wants to go by these days. But, you know, there's a guy who carries a lighter cap number, you know, than Carson Wentz. And I think, you know, Wentz is the shiniest of, you know, the options that they could get, as far as quarterbacks who would want to play in Washington, or quarterbacks who did not have a say whether or not they, you know, who couldn't say, no, I have a no-trade clause, I'm not going to play there. I think this potentially could hamstring them, and you're absolutely right. I think the better move would have been to have gotten somebody who might not be as flashy as Carson Wentz, but a proven starter, or not necessarily a proven starter, but somebody who could start in the NFL, bring in a quarterback, and then get some weapons. Instead, when Carson Wentz, if he's not successful this fall because of a lack of weapons, no one's going to say, well, it's really not his fault that they're 25th in the league in passing, because, you know, it is his fault that he doesn't have the weapons, if that makes sense. I think I'm talking in circles here, but I think the fact that they don't necessarily have the capital to go after guys, they're going to have to go after receivers in the draft. They're going to have to hit a home run and bring in some talent and have some healthy options. Otherwise, this fall, when they're 5-10 and averaging 18 points a game and can't keep up with the Joneses, everybody's going to be pointing at him, and things could end rather badly for him, and maybe even badly for Ron Rivera.
The biggest complaint about Carson Wentz is, he, again, 6'5", rocket arm, and when you get a guy with a rocket arm, they think every window is available. Every little opening is available. He does not check down. He does not give. He doesn't take what the defense gives him and says, you know what, I'll live to fight another day. That's the reason he threw that interception in the end zone against the Titans that led to an easy touchdown. He just does that. But is the offensive system, the way Washington is expected to run it in 2022, will it almost force him to do that, almost make him have to go to the checkdowns, have to go throw it away occasionally? Is there a way that it can be designed so that a new skill, for lack of a better term, can develop in his game?
Yeah, hope so, if you're a Washington fan, because you'd hate the possibilities if he's old if he's bad Carson Wentz, there are going to be a lot of long Sundays this fall. I think a very important player, and this guy's got to get healthy, and they got to get him back and in gear. J.D. McKissic, who turned out to be perhaps the best weapon for this offense last fall, or the most effective weapon, the most bang for your buck, because he was huge in the passing game. He was a good secondary runner behind Antonio Gibson, but once J.D. McKissic got hurt, the offense was, which was already kind of hamstrung, really didn't have a lot to work with. So I think Carson Wentz and J.D. McKissic need to be best friends this fall. And McKissic is a guy who I think can catch 75 balls, coming out of the backfield and being a real, being that safety valve that can sometimes be the first option, but can be the guy when, you know what, nothing is happening, nothing is working, and he finds a way to get open. So we've seen a ton of different offenses in the last 10 years, from Kyle Shanahan doing his thing to, let RG3 run a semi-option, to Jay Gruden massaging Kirk Cousins from Captain Chuck down into a 4,000-yard passer. Yeah. So tons of possibilities. Let's see how it works this fall with Wentz. And again, he needs more than just Terry McLaurin and J.D. McKissic to throw to.
I got about 60 seconds, but I did want to ask you this question. If I divide the NFC into like four tiers, the A teams, the B teams, the C teams, and the D teams, this was a team, and we had you on at the time when they were like 6-6 and they were kind of hot and they were kind of playing good football. But the way, again, we got a lot of offseason to go to. We've got a draft to go through. But where exactly is Washington in the hierarchy of the NFC?
I think they're a C team. I think that until they prove us differently, they are a C team, because so many times over the years they've snuck up. And I'm not saying that as a C team they can't make the playoffs.
Sure.
Because because the NFL is a snapshot league, meaning that teams will win games that, it's not like the NFL Major League Baseball where you have 162 pixels to deal with. You only have 16 snapshots. So there's no reason why this team can't make the playoffs. But when you look at their roster, when you look at what they've got, the 53-man group, they are not in the top two tiers at this time.
Dave, always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Take care, Tony.
You got it. Dave Preston at WTOP on Washington and the Commanders getting Carson Wentz their side of the deal. You heard that. Coming up, we'll kind of wrap up the show as we give you more of the Indianapolis side as we continue on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, this was a show I was not allowed to watch when I was a kid.
Yep,
I had to be in
here.
Bed by the time this rolled around on Tuesday nights. Three's Company. No. Young Tony D was not going to be able to watch any Suzanne Summers or Joyce DeWitt or Pamela Barnes, for that matter. No. There was one also that was kind of in the middle. She lasted like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jack Tripper. And his swinging friend Larry downstairs.
Fantastic.
And they went to the Regal Beagle.
Regal Beagle.
Larry was like, I just want to live near the beach and just be with every woman I see. That was the show. That was him. And then they had the Ropers, and like Don Knotts was a landlord.
Yeah, Farley.
Farley, yeah. Three's Company. What a show. My God. 70s television, man. 70s TV. Thanks to Dave Preston, WTOP on Washington. Again, today, if you don't know why we're doing 70s TV, the Hulk debuted on this date in 1978. Lou Ferrigno and Bill Bixby. David Banner becomes the Hulk when he gets mad, just traveling. Wherever he went, trouble followed, because everywhere he went, he could not live a simple life. He always was running into some ranch that was in trouble by the Wranglers that came in to disrupt everything, and the Hulk had to save the day.
I mean,
or wherever he went to.
When you look back on it, just the absolute worst luck, right?
Right.
He
right.
Couldn't just find,
everywhere
like,
he went.
Couldn't find some like Buddhist monk commune to go hang out with.
He was just trying to find serenity. And everywhere he went, there was always somebody breaking the law to do somebody wrong. And the Hulk had to
come. Now, you know how you could have done this show in one episode, right? Once he cleaned up the mess, why didn't he just stay?
Stay there, right. Yeah, just be like, why does he have to get his backpack and leave?
Yeah, if it was some obscure ranch in the middle of nowhere and they were fine with you being the Hulk.
Right. It wasn't like in 1978 somebody could go on social media and go, you'll never believe who's in our town.
Yep.
Holy cow, check out this video. Hashtag green monster, hashtag Hulk, hashtag green menace. Like, none of that. He could have just stayed in that town. So you and I were talking about quarterbacks for Washington over the years. And, yeah, maybe outside of, like, Ripon, Theismann, quarterbacks who won Super Bowls, they've never really had, like, a stellar quarterback crop.
No.
Remember former Tennessee Volunteer quarterback Heath Shuler played for them?
Heath Shuler.
So I came up with a brilliant, brilliant opposite. He ran for Senate, right, in North Carolina where he's from. Or a congressman. No, running. He ran for Congress. He was going to be a congressman. He ran for Congress, and I came up with a brilliant ad that they didn't use in it for his opposition, which I would have shown, if I could get the rights to it, I would have shown clips of Heath Shuler doing what he did best for Washington, which was fumbling the football, turning the ball over, and being completely inept at quarterback. And my line would have been, Heath Shuler, he already failed once in Washington. Do you want it a second time? And the wasn't that good?
That's good.
That's really good. And they didn't. I offered it for free. I said, you can take that, run with it. You'll win. Who wants an intercepted prone quarterback making legislative laws? Not me. If you're going to be a former athlete in Congress, you better be halfway decent. Nevertheless, this Wentz thing, Ron, I can't wait for the season to start. See how this thing plays out. Oh, boy. I think I got a good idea on Russell Wilson and the Broncos. I think the Broncos will be good. I got no idea on the Commanders with Carson Wentz. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Wake up call.